Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up and live. That's right. Wake up and live. How apropos is that for an opening bumper tune for this evening's program? Oh, you say what? What program? Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and yes, again, you are at the right place at the right time. Here, we bring you that news and information that's culled from around the world, most typically within the United States, but we cross those borders from time to time to bring it to you live and unadulterated. This evening, no exception, we've got that news that's for you, by you, and of you. And I want to give a shout out to everybody on the line, especially tonight, because if you're listening tonight, well, you're a survivor, and God bless you. My prayers go out to all of those who are suffering through this scourge, heinous pandemic that's been manufactured and proliferated in the homes of so many. We will get through this, though, folks. We just need to wake up and live. And that's what we're going to talk about this evening. Waking up and living. It's so important that we're engaged, being aware. And so awareness, well, that's our theme this evening. It's a jam-packed program. We've got two very special guests, remarkable minds. I like to refer to them as, and I believe you'll find that to be the case for my regular listeners. You, of course, know that because you've gotten my notice that goes out prior to the program. If you're not on the mail list, send me an email. I say it week in and week out. Send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore C-L-A, 1-8 at msn.com. We're going to be talking about wellness this evening. We're going to be talking about being in the present. And with that, receiving the present of life, of love, and of balance and wellness. And so, take a moment. Reach out to your friends and family and tell them you got to tune in. It's on. It's happening. It's live. It's now. Mentioned this evening, and I have a monologue that I have every week, but I really want to get right into our guest. And so I'm going to forego that. There, suffice it to say, is just so much going on in mainstream. And as I say, I don't like to dibble and dabble. However, in light of what's happening, especially now, you know, you do need to just kind of check out and see what's being put out there. You need to know what to avoid, so to speak, so that you can forewarn others. And also for your own self, just know what is being spewed, all right? So from mainstream, I can say, as I've said for over 10 years, much of which is fake news, and I hope there's no one that's offended that our president uses that term as well. I've been using it before he became president, and I was reminded by a colleague that, well, Daryl, I know you've been using it for a while, but I know someone that's been using it for 20. I said, I don't want to hear that. It's mine. No, I'm just kidding. But I have been using it for quite a while. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in terms of that whole fake news situation that's going on. And so, as I said, I won't go much into the monologue to take a moment to say, what is this fake news? Maybe I don't define it the same as our president, because he may be defining it as news that's related to what's called liberalism. So you got this, these terms, liberalism, conservatism, left wing, right wing. You know, it's all the same bird. I mean, really. No, fake news is when you have something that's labeled as news and it's really an op-ed, you know, an opinionated editorial. That's what news is today. When you have your newscaster saying, and by the way, he or she, regardless whether you're talking Democrat or Republican, you know, they don't know their butt from a hole in the ground. I mean, they don't go that extreme. We're not there yet. I give it another year, and they'll be talking like that, even though, depending what you're watching, you may get that kind of terminology. That's fake news, folks. I don't need to hear your opinion. Just like John Brinkley, who is a newscaster? I know a John Brinkley. Oh, one of my colleagues. Walter Cronkite and his partner back in the day. You got basically this is what happened. But I don't care to share my opinion. This is what happened. This person was here at this time and this place, and this is what happened. You make of it what you want, folks. That's the news. Now it's, and you know what they meant to do when they did that, and because they did it, because they wanted to do it, and this is why, and it was a whole political. What? That's fake news, folks. So, now that I've gotten on my soapbox for a moment and basically maybe insulted half the populace, just kidding, let's move on with the program. First up, first at bat, we have Dr. Glenn Mendoza, one of our regular and frequent guests, also referred to as Master Glenn. And Master Glenn is, well, he's an MD, you know, first and foremost. But he's a doctor that's more in the integrated end. You're hearing more and more about integrated doctors, those who are basically being more holistic in their mindset. And so Master Glenn is a master pranic healer, and that's a form of energy healing. And it's being recognized worldwide, in fact. So Master Glenn will be joining us very shortly, and he'll be on for a short time. He has a meditation, a worldwide meditation. He'll be actually talking about this evening that you can actually participate in for coronavirus healing, not just of yourself, but of your loved ones, and frankly, you know, worldwide. Because, you know, as he likes to say, and I've said many times, everything is energy, and energy is everything. So we're going to be having a conversation very shortly with Master Glenn.
Dr. Glenn Mendoza.
Is that him? Is he on with us? Maybe not. Cecil, is that? Okay, he's not with us yet. I guess they were trying to reach him. But Master Glenn, as I said, he's affectionately referred to, will be joining us very shortly. And we're going to be talking about meditation, full moon meditation. Hopefully he can join us because Master Glenn travels around the world. He may be in Singapore or Bangladesh or... He could be literally in any nook and cranny of the world because he's recognized and respected worldwide. I did speak with him earlier, and he did say he has a few moments to join us to talk about, well, this upcoming full moon, the energies that are associated with it, and how we all can utilize those energies for our wellness, our well-being, especially with what's going on right now. So I'm really hopeful, and I guess they were trying to reach Master Glenn, but I guess they could not get through. So we'll hopefully have Master Glenn with us. If not, we'll go right into our second phase of the program, which is going to be coming up, Mr. Tony Grant. Let's see if Master Glenn is with us here. All right, so I am aware, been made aware that Master Glenn is with us, and so we're going to go right to that. He has a limited amount of time to be with us as we have a sort of a packed program this evening. So at about he's only got about 20, 25 minutes with us. So Master Glenn, as I said, is a, he's an MD, but he's also a master pranic healer, which is a form of energy healing. So he goes beyond traditional medicine in order to bring about wellness to more of a holistic and what some would refer to as alternative form of bringing about balance and wellness. He is also a meditation and astrology expert. And we're going to talk to some of those things hopefully in the limited time we have. So without further ado, because we want to talk about what's happening with this upcoming full moon, which is one of the most powerful full moons of the year. And I believe Master Glenn is in studio with us virtually. And Master Glenn, are you there?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Okay. So Master Glenn, I'm going to get right into it. We have a little limited time, and I know this evening you have lots going on, and we're going to hopefully talk a little bit about that. I did give a little prelude about your background and the fact that we have a full moon coming up, so why don't we get right into this full moon that's coming up, and you being a meditation expert, many of our listeners are aware that you've been doing a meditation for, I want to say, about 49 or 50 days now.
I forgot already. I think that you know how long we've been on lockdown. I guess everybody forgets already that.
All right. I'm going to just hand the mic over to you. So tell us a little bit about the full moon meditation that's coming up and the full moon. Maybe we should prelude with just, you know, why is it a full moon that we would want to meditate on? What is the value there? And then share with us some of the things that you've been doing with regard to meditation and how that links into this full moon.
Okay. Thanks for the invitation, Daryl, and welcome to your listeners. And I'd like to talk about meditation and specifically full moon meditation, but by and large, meditation. As Daryl has mentioned, we've been on a lockdown for almost around 47 or 48 days. I just want the listeners to know that on March 13, when the lockdown came in, just go jog your memory. A month and a half ago, there was a lot of panic. There was a lot of lockdown. People didn't know what lockdown means like. It looks like you stay in your home because of the coronavirus. There's a lot of fear of the coronavirus. At least we live here close to New York City. We're in New Jersey. And there's a lot of fear across the nation, across the world. So I started the meditation group. I think this is what the group needs to remove stress relief. We know meditation is a stress reliever, and we could start removing the fears. So we've done that. I'll hold your hands just to do it as a prelude. Then it continued for only 7 days. Then around March 31, we said, there's going to be a full moon on April 7. Okay, why don't we shoot for it? Let's go for a big full moon, and I'll talk to you about the full moon meditation. And came full moon, we were able to do about close to 30,000 people throughout the entire world meditating at the same time, so that was really fantastic, with the purpose of blessing the entire earth. That was the purpose. It's a purpose-driven work. You bless the earth, at that time, there are several countries. The United States are starting to hurt. Italy is hurting bad. Spain was hurting bad. UK, France, and Germany are hurting bad. Spain, Iran, and other areas are starting to hurt. And after that, he said, let's continue. And that's what we've been doing. We continued up to now. It's just 48 days. At every, I invite you, 9 o'clock in the evening, you could join us. We'll try to give you the link. If you want to join, we have close to 1,000 people meditating every night. 1,000 people now meditating every night from different parts of the world. It's 6:30 in India, and people are just so happy to start their day with a meditation. It's about 9 o'clock in Singapore. In Australia, it's early morning, so they loved it. On the other hand, in the United States, it's around 9 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the West Coast. So it was an opportune time to review the day and relax. So the meditation per se, looking at it, the meditation is a big, big advantage right now with the lockdown. It removes the stress. In fact, the comments people have, I'm trying to summarize that. I told them what are the positive things that you've done. And I just want to share with you. One person from India said, every day is like a morning cup. The meditation feels like a morning cup of tea without which I can't think of starting my day. And some people, most of them, the meditation itself brought happiness, gratitude, and peace with them. One said, it's the first time I get to do meditation every single day consistently for so long and for many times a day. I was able to reconnect with my life, with my source and my soul in a positive way. I experienced deep gratitude at levels never yet experienced. The love aspect is I so intense that I feel one love with every person and with all. It's become a regular practice for me, waking up and completing my daily essential activity. These are just the meditations of consistent meditation. So you could see it. Some of these people are very busy. They're active. They're executives. We have some executive CEOs from New York. All of a sudden they realize was that, oh, this is the time to meditate. And they feel the energy. In fact, we're in the process now of probably writing an article, so this will come into one of the leading magazines. You'll probably know writing about this meditation. And there was some stillness. Despite the chaos around us, distractions, uncertainties, there was stillness. The people feel very relaxed. I am extremely energetic after the meditation and feel so good. I could feel deep stillness and awareness. And the healing we've been doing, anyway, so that's basically the meditation part. The full moon, how about the full moon? I mentioned to you about April 7, the full moon. The full moon is the peak energy part time of the month. So when we meditated, it was intense. It just builds up. The May 7 full moon, there's a full moon on May 7 next week, Thursday. This will be at 6:45 in the morning, Eastern time, New York time. And we're going to go ahead and we just set up the everything all set to have a global meditation. We're going to run it. A lot of groups are doing it at the same time. And we're expecting close to around 20, 30,000 just in our group alone. Why is that? In May 7, it's like the mother of all full moons. So we have 12 full moons in a year or 13, depending. We have we can have a what do you call this? A May 7 or the full moon of Taurus is considered the most powerful full moon. It is said ancient wisdom says that this is the time wherein great teachers are actually born. In fact, this may be the time that the Lord Buddha may have been born, may have reached his enlightenment, and may have passed on during the time of the full moon. We are an eclectic group when we meditate, but we all spiritual aspirants usually look up to the full moon of May. A couple of things I would like to tell your group before we have about actually 6 days, 6 or maybe 7 days for that full moon, and there are ways to prepare for it. If people who are having deep meditation experience or people who did not have any meditation experiences during the past 48 days, some of them have deep meditation experiences I have mentioned. So I'd like to invite and submit to your listeners, they said this is the time to probably experience regular meditation up to leading up to next week and experiencing it in the full moon meditation. We're getting the links ready and we're promoting it. But for the listeners, you could look at fullmoonmeditation.us, fullmoonmeditation.us. It will give you a portal to start doing that, getting into the links and all the information that we may have. But in the next day, in the next 2 days, we will come out with it, and I'll give Daryl a link so we could have it in the Facebook, we could have it in YouTube, and we could have it on a website. So that's our plan.
Dr. Mendoza, can the listeners go to fullmoonmeditation.us and get a link to your nightly meditations in preparation for the the full moon on the 7th?
Yes. In fact, I will look at the. I will forward to you. I will forward to you, Daryl, the link,
mm-hmm.
Because they change it every day. So it's, you know, my team seems to be very good at that. They did not want to put all, since we're advertising it every day. My team did not want to clutter boxes, so they change it every time. So I'll forward this to Daryl. Actually, what is the link? It's a little complicated, but it's in a zoom.us. I'll forward it now to you, Daryl. So I think you could, mm-hmm. if you could, anyway, so I'll do that. I'm in front of the computer, so
and I'll forward it to the broadcast list. Sure, absolutely. I'm familiar with the fullmoonmeditation.us. I've been there, of course, many. I remember when you started that, and that's why mm-hmm. why I ask. Again, if they were to go to the, you know, to the website fullmoonmeditation.us, is there a possibility that they will? There will be a link there to go to your nightly meditation. Although you're going to send me a direct link.
Yeah, I think for those that are... this will probably be better because it's a direct link to you. So
okay.
I have it now. Actually sent. I'm
okay.
in front of the computer, so that's good. Yeah, we're locked down, so.
Okay, fantastic.
So if you could send it to it's a link, and you just click on the link. It's a Zoom. We have, interestingly enough, people held on. We started with about 500 attendees, and we have they're translated in Spanish and Portuguese. A couple of hundreds of people who don't speak English, actually it's being translated to them. It's really, really, I'm just really excited of how it's reaching out and affecting people. There's one person from Chile. He said, I lived outside Santiago, Chile. Every 8:30, 8:45, I go to my roof and I close my video. I see the stars and I hear you, but I cannot do a video because the signal is low, but I do the meditation every night. There's one person, he said, there's a elderly person I am helping her set up her computer every night just so she could listen to it. The extending of the hand was really, 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 really impressive. And one of the things I'll discuss actually tonight with them is that what are the positive things that have happened? What are the positive things that for those who have meditated for the past, some of them all 40 days, but consistently, deep meditation experiences. Number two was that I told them, I said, like breathing, we inhale, we exhale. Perhaps the coronavirus is teaching us to exhale. So people started exhaling. I said, exhale, do what you can do for those less fortunate than we are. I was even more direct. I said, give money. Why do we have to give money? There's a biblical saying that it is in giving that you receive. So what happened was that I told them this is untenuous times, and we need to be economically stable once the new normal comes in. A lot of people, they don't have work, they don't get paid. Some people get furloughed, some people get cuts in their salaries, some people have been fired, unemployed. So we need stability. So what happened was that by giving, it gives you an energy that will probably increase one's prosperity and abundance. And the effect was really fantastic. All of a sudden, people were offering, giving loans, giving donation to fundraising, to homeless, to the food bank, to the blind, those who are living alone, donating to scholarships, sending money. If they see somebody in Facebook who has a problem, then they started donating to COVID relief funds, patients with cancer, to the family. One donated money to the son who does not want to ask, donated to Salvation Army, donated to friends having difficulty, donated to homeless. One donated to a waitress, give $100 tip to a waitress. NGO. Anyways, it's good. People are exhaling. And the next step we said was that okay. I asked this to your listeners. What did the coronavirus teach you? We said that the coronavirus or the pandemic crisis is a teacher. Like pain, it could be a teacher. You don't want pain, but the coronavirus is a teacher in uncertain times or tumultuous times. So it taught us something. All levels, individual, as a group, as a family, as a country. But the distress and discomforting feelings says that energetically something is wrong. And the lockdown period has shown us that we need to take action in order to change how we are living and to stop doing some things and start doing some other things. I think that's, to me, that's what I've seen in my life. And therefore, the coronavirus is not bad. Overall, it's not bad. I'm just looking at the positive thing that is in it. For me to say it's not bad, I've lost friends. There are some doctors I know. One of my NICU nurses had coronavirus and passed away. So it's not that I'm not looking at it as good on that aspect, but it's a teacher. It's been a teacher for us. So I ask, we should accept it, embrace it, and move forward. and look at the positive things it has done for us. That's it.
So to send out the notices to folks to get in, and we're going to anyone that, you know, wants to get information from me, send me an email to Daryl_CLA18@msn.com, and I'll make sure I forward it to you. I'll forward it to our list, our broadcast list as well. And what time is the meditation going to begin on next Thursday? 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock New York time. 9 o'clock New York time. We do it every night. We may have, some people are asking if we could still continue it because we're just in the way we're in. We're trying to reopen. People would still need it. We're not a lot of places have really reopened, and we still need it to bolster our energy and fear and remove our fears and worries as we moved on. And the full moon meditation actually will do it. Doing the full moon meditation at an exact time, it's actually even more powerful or auspicious. I think it will be a good experience for your listeners to understand that it will be guided by my teacher. He has a recording of this because for 30 years he's been guiding the meditation. We call it WASAC meditation, which it was named after for the Indian month named Vaisak. And he's been guiding that for almost 30 years, and we're going to continue with the tradition. So I will still be there. I will facilitate, my wife and I will facilitate the meditation. We'll even give a short talk of what to expect, several things that need to be done, and which right now people are preparing to exercise, keep the body strong, meditate, do inner reflection, watch your food intakes, simple things that people can do to prepare physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually for an auspicious spiritual meditation.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Master Glenn, thank you for taking the time out.
Thank you. Thank you, Daryl.
Next Thursday, and you said that was going to be at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern time, I thought. That
no, 6:45.
6:45,
actually,
we
for some of you who are early riser, it will be perfect. We start dating at 6:15, but the program starts at 5:45 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell just a quick one for your listeners. When I was younger, I experimented because they said if you meditate on the full moon at the exact time, it's going to be fantastic. So I've been doing that for years. So just want to share that. I think you don't even know that, Daryl. But I'll wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll wait until it's 2:20, and I'll do my meditation.
Well, we're looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And perhaps the next time you can give us some of the attributes of Taurus, because those attributes are things that everyone can experience, correct, or not?
Yes.
Can you give us just a couple attributes of Taurus?
Taurus is the bull. So the good news about the bull is that the bull is very practical. The bull is very, very practical. So what happened was that the bull is makes sure security. They want to be that there's security that they wanted to do. Another one is they want to be stability, comfort and stability. They're anus, value anus above all else. And like a bull, they don't shy away from hard work and ambitious, and there's mental tenacity. And, of course, they want to enjoy things that are cozy, things that are comfortable for them. But the one thing I want to remember, to the group to remember, Bull is the hard worker. They work hard. They're ambitious, and they love stability in life. So for your listeners who are Taurus, I will tell you, they make sure that their families are stable, their finances are stable, their insurance are stable, their retirement are stable. That's very typical Taurus.
Well, we thank you for that. We'll be looking forward to the full moon meditation and looking forward to the nightly meditations to prepare for that up until that point and from now. So we have been talking with Master Glenn Mendoza, Dr. Mendoza, pranic healer, MD, author, humanitarian, and we've just had a plum pleasing good time having this conversation with him. As we go into our next segment now that I'm sure many have been waiting for, we have Mr. Tony Grant. Now, Mr. Grant is a broadcast journalist specializing in medical research for numerous decades, since 1968, in fact. Mr. Grant is a people's advocate, and he takes pleasure in bringing truth to power. And so this evening, we're going to follow up on a conversation that we had about a month ago, as Mr. Grant had done some recent research, and he brought to us some of the untold truths about pandemics, and in fact about this coronavirus, COVID-19. So this evening, he's going to talk about some other research that he's come across. In fact, much of which may be considered controversial. Most, if not all of which, you will rarely hear on mainstream media, by the way. And I say that because, in fact, as you know, on Progressive News, we like all of our guests, if they're bringing information, to be able to validate with references. And within the last week or so, I had gotten some information from Mr. Grant, and it was a YouTube. And when I went back to look at it, it was gone. So, you know, we need to be aware that much of what we need to know, we intentionally are not being told. And so with that, I'm going to bring Mr. Grant to the airwaves and let him tell us a little bit about the misnomers with regard to pandemics. And I think that'll be a great segue into some of the more current information that he has, because this is not the first pandemic, and I'd like Mr. Grant to speak about that. I mean, we've had the H1N1, and I know he knows many others, Ebola, and so many, the Zika, and even in our last 10 years of airing, we've gone through a couple of pandemics, in fact. You remember the MRSA. So with that said, Mr. Tony Grant, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. It's always a enlightening pleasure to have you join us.
Good evening. Good evening. Thank you so much, Brother Clark. Thank you for your invitation.
Yes. So as I said, you know, I'd like to start because you are a broadcast journalist and specializing in medical research as a research journalist. You've done a lot of research with regard to pandemics over the many, many, many years. How does this compare to others? And if you would just share with us, you know, that whole aspect of a pandemic.
That's a very interesting question, Daryl. And I think that we can go as far back as the 1918 Spanish flu, which had nothing to do with Spain. It did not originate in Spain. And you mentioned SARS and MERS. And, of course, we've had Ebola, and we've had two swine flu epidemics. And in none of these situations have we been given the correct, accurate information from our public health authorities. When the Spanish flu was here in 1918, We were told that, we were given the idea that it came from Spain somehow. But the Spanish flu, or the so-called Spanish flu, originated in Fort Riley, Kansas. It was a result of a new regime being established by the military to give a wide range of vaccines to soldiers. After the Spanish-American War, there were so many soldiers who were decimated by typhoid fever, it was decided to prevent the loss of military personnel, soldiers, by starting out vaccinating them with vaccines that were not as well researched as we have them now, but still, the typhoid fever vaccine has always been very suspect. And this vaccine caused men, according to military records, to die at the vaccination stations where they were being vaccinated. Some died on the troop ships overseas, and it was from Kansas that the Spanish flu, in addition to other campaigns against typhoid fever that were occurring at the time, the Rockefeller Combine had concocted a typhoid fever so-called vaccine that was simply just a mixture of the raw, if you will, scrapings of pustules coming from Chinese who at the time were experiencing a typhoid fever epidemic. And the dead, their pustules would be scraped off, and that's how the Rockefeller vaccine was created. And as the Rockefeller vaccine was sold around the world, we had what we call the Spanish flu, which to this day is thought to be some sort of mysterious thing. We don't know how it started, and it had nothing to do with Spain. And, of course, we're not going to call it the Rockefeller flu, because that would, I'm sure, make certain powerful people very unhappy. And so these are examples of how we are not being given the right information by our public health authorities. And I think that this is a difficult thing for people to understand. We trust our doctors. We believe in our science. We think that the American medical system is the finest example of science in action since the beginning of the world. But we're not aware that there is corruption. There are mistakes that are being made. And I think that when you talk about fake news, as you did earlier, we have to be aware that if we're depending upon the mainstream news, if you think that CNN is giving you everything you need to know, if you think that ABC or the New York Times is telling you everything, then I want to offer the example, Daryl, because many people think this whole fake news controversy is just a kind of a cat fight between people on different political sides. So I want to give a shining example of what we really mean by fake news. December 16th, 1992, the very successful and very much watched primetime live news broadcast featured supposedly a man who painted himself as a bulldog reporter, Sam Donaldson, interviewing Lloyd Jowers. And on that program, Lloyd Jowers laid out and revealed who really killed Martin Luther King. Now, Martin Luther King is someone we should be caring about. And certainly, if the real killer was never brought to justice, we should care about that. That should be big news. And as Lloyd Jowers explained his role in the assassination, he explained who the others were involved, because Lloyd Jowers...
How do you spell Jowers? Excuse me. Just, I don't mean to
interrupt, I'm sorry, it's quite all right. Jowers, or Lloyd spelled without the extra L, just Lloyd. He explained exactly what really had happened, and the main point I want to offer is that this ABC nationwide broadcast, it became silenced. There was no ABC news program that reported that this had occurred. There was a little bit of a mention in USA Today, but for the most part, that news was blacked out. Subsequently, when Lloyd Jowers was put on trial by the King family, you remember how O.J. Simpson, they couldn't manage a criminal conviction, so later they tried him in civil court, and they got a conviction there. And these court sessions are opportunities for people with evidence to come forth and have the evidence assessed by a court and by a jury. So in Lloyd Jowers' civil case mounted against him by the King family, the jury decided that Lloyd Jowers was in fact the executor, because he wasn't the puppet master. The puppet master's name was Liberto, but he was identified as the one who arranged the plot, hired the assassin. He was decided by the jury that he was guilty, along with members of the United States military intelligence. The whole thing was laid out. My point, because we have to go on and talk about other things, my point is, all of this can be plainly learned by reading the finest work on the assassination of King ever done. It's called The Plot to Kill King. There is nothing more detailed and more exact. All the people involved have been interviewed. Their interviews have been corroborated. The detail of research and real journalistic perfection, The Plot to Kill King. And my point is that here we have big news that was never reported in the news. If you didn't happen to be watching the primetime program, you would never have heard about this. The trial of Lloyd Jowers was blacked out by the news media. And so when people say, what is this whole fake news thing? Oh, it's just a catfight between the Republicans and the Democrats. No. The truth is not being revealed to the American public. And in a democracy, you must have a well-informed electorate for the voters to be able to make the right kind of decisions. And so similarly, we have other problems, and I don't have time to go into detail, but I want to talk about on the medical side. New research.
Let me ask you before you go forward, real quick, for our listeners, because I know our listeners get riveted when you come on because, you know, as a research journalist, that's what you do, and you obviously have that passion. So we can't get enough. And so I have to slow you down to get the details because listeners just call me and say, "Well, now wait a minute. What was that? The conspiracy to kill King? No, the plot. So could you share? Is it the plot to kill King? Those are the exact words?
That's the title of the book. The book is written by literally a man who loved King so much that he took it upon himself to fund the entire investigation, which took over 20 years, and during this 20-year period, he published several books, which were leading him gradually to the final, polished version of what actually happened. He took it upon himself to mount the trial against Lloyd Jowers. He covered all the expenses. He was the King family lawyer, William F. Pepper. Is the name of the author and King family lawyer who did everything pro bono. He's not a rich man. He believed so passionately in the work of King, and he was so devastated by King's assassination that he doggedly would not refuse to stop until he got all of the truth. The plot to kill King does not resemble in any way what the news media has told us about how King was assassinated. No resemblance whatsoever. The news media has never told us about the involvement of the United States military intelligence and how King was targeted originally in Florida, but they did not get the go sign to murder him there. The eventual shooter was not a member of military intelligence, but military intelligence was there that day in Memphis as a backup in case the shooter who had been hired by Lloyd Jowers was in cooperation with military intelligence. It's all in the book. And the point I'm making here, unless there are more questions, Daryl, I'll stop for a moment if there are any more questions about the details. The point I'm making is that fake news is not about some kind of argument or catfight. Whose opinion? Fake news is about the fact that our journalists are not giving us the truth. They're not doing it. And if this is not a big enough example, I don't know what is. Everyone in our country cares about the work and the legacy of Martin Luther King, yet his killers have never been brought to justice. Never. James Earl Ray had nothing to do with the murder of Martin Luther King. He never had a trial. He never had a trial. He was never put on trial. And so I want to talk now about a medical matter that is just as much a terrible example of fake news, or the failure of our news media to inform us. Research at the University of Alabama in Birmingham, published in the journal Stroke, contradicted all of the medical assumptions saying that we must control our blood pressure with drugs in order to prevent stroke. And this was not a minor research study. This is a study that included 26,785 black and white participants, all age 45 plus, and the study lasted for 6.3 years. And what the study showed was, contrary to standard practice dogma, this is standard practice is what every doctor has to observe in his practice, or lest he be sued for malpractice. The research showed that any blood pressure drug you take, any one you take, increases your risk of stroke by 30%. If you take two blood pressure drugs, and many do, your risk has now been increased by 60%. It's saying that blood pressure drugs contribute to the incidence of stroke. Now, this news has not reached the people. Most doctors don't know about this news. And so my point is that when we talk about coronavirus, we have to be aware that there are facts and science that is not reaching you through the media. It's not coming to the fore. And we have to become accustomed to the fact that if you want the truth, you've got to dig deeper. If you're depending upon MSNBC to tell you the truth, you're not going to have the truth. Now,
let me ask you on that. The fact of blood pressure meds increasing the incidence of stroke. You mentioned some references. Can you recap some of those references again, please?
It's the University
of Alabama.
And I
know we can go into the archives, but go ahead.
Yes. No, it's the University of Alabama's research at Birmingham, research published in the journal Stroke. The name of the study was Reasons for Geographic and Racial Differences in Stroke. That's what the name of the study. It's called Reasons for Geographic and Racial Differences in Stroke. And during that stroke, the lead scientist, Dr. George Howard, professor at the Department of Biostatistics at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, he was able to, over a period of 6.3 years, amass the statistics, that's what a biostatistician does, to determine that the idea that blood pressure drugs protect you from stroke is exactly opposite of the science.
Reasons for...
Geographic and racial differences in stroke. Reasons for Geographic and Racial Differences in Stroke is the name of the study. And it's published in the prestigious scientific journal Stroke is the name of the scientific journal. And so the point I'm making is that we are all being encouraged to be corralled in an area of false delusions that I call the information apartheid zone. We're all being invited to be on a side of the fence where you're not going to get the right information. The news media is not in the business of giving you the truth. The news media is in the business of controlling what you know. That's the business of the news media. And so when it comes to the coronavirus, even though some of this information has slipped out for maybe a couple of broadcasts, we now know, of course, that it didn't come from bats. We all know that now. It didn't come from bats. We do know that it escaped somehow. We don't know how. Maybe it was released from a lab in China. I do not imply and do not have information that says that something, some kind of evil intent was involved, but it did escape from a lab in China where it was being researched, where it had been developed in order to further research that was involved with trying to find ways of using disease to hurt people. And we know also that the idea that the virus can attack you is completely scientifically false. There is no virus that is alive. All viruses are dead. Viruses harm you if you ingest a virus or if you breathe viral particles in, then your body has to provide a willing environment. Your body has to be a fertile field because the virus can't attack you. The virus depends upon your cells taking in the virus and replicating the DNA sequence of that virus. And that's how you get sick. Viruses cannot attack you. They do not eat. They don't replicate on their own. You have to provide a willing environment for this situation. And so this is something that our public health officials are never going to talk about. They don't.
Are you saying that viruses are not living organisms?
And most of us who are old as me, if you're older than 70, they taught you that in ninth grade biology. If you go online right now, they say, yes, viruses are dead, or some are now saying they are kind of half dead and half alive, because the whole viral issue has got an overarching kind of fear-mongering aspect to it. Fear of viruses are good for drug companies. They're good for vaccine companies. You must all read the book Fear of the Invisible by the magnificent Janine Roberts, where she goes down the line explaining how fear of viruses have always been overblown way beyond the real danger, but because we have the fear, we don't know the facts. Now, we're not saying that no one is dying of coronavirus. What we're saying is that we need the truth. We need accurate information about exactly what level of danger there is. If you have a healthy immune system, then the virus is not going to be able to replicate in your body. You don't need a mask. I'm not saying not to use a mask, but I'm saying ask yourself, are you burdening your system with an overload of immune system chores? If you're eating meat, then you know that meat has bacteria in it. That meat that's so attractively packaged at the meat case of the supermarket, you know that if you make a mistake and leave it on the counter and don't refrigerate it and you go for a long weekend, when you come back, you've got to throw that meat away. The same if it was eggs. You know that milk gets sour. Where does the bacteria come from to cause milk to get sour? It's in the milk. And I'm just saying that if you choose to eat milk, eggs, and chicken and meat, then you know you're telling your immune system, I love this stuff. It tastes so good. It's what my family taught me to eat. And so immune system, just handle the bacteria. So now you have an immune system that's already got a heavy burden. So you're not going to have a strong immune system as someone who's saying, I'm going to eat clean. I'm going to eat lots of green leafy vegetables, fresh fruit. That person's going to have a stronger immune system. And so for all of us, either we have a clean diet or not, are we getting enough vitamin C? Are we getting enough of the – are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I got someone's trying to come and call me, so I just want to make sure it wasn't you. Are we getting enough mm-hmm. of the botanical medicines, echinacea, astragalus? Some of these botanical medicines are so easy to obtain, but they're so effective. And, you know, someone came on to MSNBC – I saw them on MSNBC and on CNN, a doctor saying, We must resist the temptation to go for all of these home remedies like echinacea. But these are people who obviously don't read the Journal of Biomedicine and Biotechnology, where it says that echinacea fights viral infection and increases immune action, and where it says that, well, in the evidence-based complementary alternative medicine journal, it says that ginger fights viral invasion. That means when you're faced with the virus, the ginger helps you resist it, and it fights viral replication. So that means that if the virus takes hold, it will have more difficulty replicating if you eat raw ginger or find some way to make raw ginger tea. I'm saying that on the news, they have a doctor who we think of as an expert telling us not to take echinacea, not to take astragalus, elderberry, oregano oil, rosemary oil, licorice, garlic, ginger, lemongrass, peppermint oil. All these things fight viruses, but doctors who know nothing about herbs are counseling us, don't take these things. It's fake news. It's not accurate. It's not good science. And so, just to breeze through some of the major things that we have to bear in mind about the coronavirus, it isn't something
that just... Can I just intervene? Because sure. I love research. And I always encourage our listeners to do so. We have a very educated listening audience, which is why I know they love you. And so as we're talking, let me just read what I found. Isn't it wonderful? We didn't have the Internet. Think about that. I mean, you've got about 10 years on me. But, 40 years ago, come on, Mr. Grant. I just pick up my phone. So let me just check out what my guy – now, I'm a nutritionist and naturopath, so I understand what you're saying exactly and know that. But just for our listeners' sake, I can't encourage you enough. So I said, okay, for our listeners, go Google our viruses. And the first thing, because, you know, everything's listed in Google by search engine, how often it's searched for. And when you type in "are viruses," you could be saying, are viruses the most dangerous thing? You could be typing anything. The first thing that comes up is, are viruses living? That was the first thing that comes up out of five or ten different, you know, possibilities.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, real quick, just to intervene, because we're going to extend this a little bit, because we want to hear you out, Mr. Grant. Here is the deal, the skinny on it, or the fat, depending on your perspective. Viruses are not, and he put it these in bold letters, are not living things. Viruses are complicated assemblies of molecules, including proteins, nucleic acids, lipids, and carbohydrates. But on their own, they can do nothing until they enter a living, in bold letters, cell. Without cells, viruses would not be able to multiply. Therefore, viruses are not living things. And it goes on and on and on. But folks, just think, our children have this wonderful thing called the Internet. Now, it has its drawbacks for the perverts out there and the pedophiles. But for a positive and a productive approach, folks, we can just pull up this information that Mr. Grant is talking about. So I just, everyone's homework, just so you know, you want to Google, are viruses, and just do your own research along with some of these other references that Mr. Grant has been talking about. Okay, so Mr. Grant, back to you. I apologize for that intervention, but I'm always keying in on my listeners, because that's the reason I'm here and we're here. So,
thank you very much, Darrell. No, that was very good. And I want to, since you mentioned that, everyone to bear in mind that it is not good for the business of vaccine makers and for the business of drug makers for you to know the truth about viruses. And so, therefore, you will find websites where you will have them say, well, they're kind of living and they're kind of dead. Or the idea that they're dead is old hat, because they want you to be afraid. So be aware that you, when you go through the Internet, as you know, you have to be very careful
to go
to enough sites, get enough good information to know what the story is. But the point I'm only trying to make is that what Darrell just did is an example.
Because you're
of what
right.
We need.
There's another site that says evidence that viruses really are alive. So you're right. There's another counter to that.
Now, this is a site that you're just talking about now that contradicts what?
Exactly. For example, here's one. It says, new evidence supports the hypothesis that viruses are living entities that share a long evolutionary history with cells. And then it goes on to talk about that. So you're right.
It's useful to be as old as I am, so I say to myself, well, I have the science that has taught me from the very beginning that viruses are dead. So now I'm suspicious of people who are now trying to convince me that there's a theory viruses are alive. And all I'm saying is that these are the kinds of things that we have to watch out for in order to be able to navigate our way to truth on the Internet, because we know there's a lot of falsehood on the Internet. In any case, we have got to understand that we cannot depend on the news to give us the truth. If you think that PBS NewsHour is where you go to get the truth, then you are a victim of information apartheid. You have to go beyond that. And so here's the situation with coronavirus. We now know the coronavirus was developed in a laboratory. And we also know what many doctors have been crying out for people to know, and that is that the reason why pneumonia statistics, deaths from pneumonia, are suddenly plummeting, suddenly the number of pneumonia deaths that occur every year are not nearly as many as last year, is because the pneumonia deaths are being recategorized as coronavirus deaths. The COPD deaths, they are being categorized as, the doctors are being instructed to even indicate when they have cancer deaths that the patient died from cancer and coronavirus. But for conditions like emphysema, death from COPD, death from asthma, those are all conditions that doctors have been instructed to list as death from coronavirus. These are not people who have had their blood tested and they found that the coronavirus was abundant and somehow contributed to the death. These are medical administrative sleight of hand counting techniques. And so the point is that the latest official figures regarding, or should I say, the official projections of the ultimate deadly impact of coronavirus is that coronavirus, in the end, will kill no more tragic people than regular influenza will kill. And so there are fears way over the top because of misunderstandings in the beginning and, you could say, errors from abundance of caution. I do not say throw away your mask. I don't know how your immune system is. How's your immune system? Are you getting plenty of fresh fruit? Do you know that the skins of lemons have been shown to kill coronavirus? Are you getting plenty of water? Are you providing a great host for the coronavirus, or is the coronavirus going to be knocked up, have its socks knocked off by your immune system? How well are you taking care of yourself? Are you eating your green salads? Are you getting plenty of green juice? What are we doing to protect ourselves? Of course, these are things that give us great advantage in all of our health issues. It reverses diabetes. Doctors are using these same methods to reverse diabetes, reverse hypertension. And so even though we may think of burgers and fries being more delicious, or we may think that KFC is the way that we really enjoy sitting down to a happy family meal, those are not ways to build your immune system. Now, returning to the coronavirus, we now have clear indication that anyone tested for the coronavirus who has had a flu shot in the last 10 years, you're going to test positive for coronavirus whether you have the coronavirus or not. You should be aware of that. So when we hear all the scary statistics, look, it's all over the place. How can it be in Alaska? How did it get to, well, those people got a flu shot. I'm saying, generally speaking, we don't know the details. And we're not saying that no one is dying from coronavirus. We're saying the answer ought to be, how is my immune system? How are my bowels moving? Am I drinking enough water? Do I get enough fresh fruit? Do I have any echinacea extract on hand, any astragalus, elderberry, oregano oil to boost my immune system to be able to knock this coronavirus out? Or shall I just huddle in the corner of my apartment or my home and be afraid? These are the questions we have to ask.
Let me ask you, you mentioned anyone who is taking a vaccine will test positive for corona. Is that what you just said?
Influenza vaccine in the last 10 years, this is an estimate, the doctors are saying around 10 years, as long as you've had a vaccine for influenza, for the flu, either the trivalent or the regular flu vaccine, you're going to test positive for coronavirus. It's not going to be in the news. I mean, where would we then be with our confidence in the testing? There are four different tests out there, and they're all faulty. All of them. The CDC lists the test that is most recommended now. You can go on CDC's website, and you go to the coronavirus test that they're recommending, and they'll give you all the details about how to administer the test. Then at the bottom, they will say, you cannot use this test for diagnosis. This test does not tell you if you have coronavirus or not. That's what that language means. Here's how you give the test. Here's how you administer the test. But at the end, you cannot use these test results to have a definitive understanding of whether you have coronavirus or not. It's all there on the CDC website.
Then what's the purpose of the test?
To give the impression that we are doing something, that we're resolving something. I mean, we're not telling them, in the news, they're not telling you the test is worthless. In the news, we're thinking, oh, I have to go get tested. I'm worried. Or I'm worried about those people over there. They haven't been tested yet. The news is not giving us the truth. The news is not in the business of informing the public. The news is in the business of controlling what you know.
So the CDC website, and I have to really peruse this, it actually states.
You look at the test and go to the part where they're explaining how to administer the test. And at the bottom, they state you cannot use this for diagnosis, or you cannot allow the test results do not provide a definite diagnosis or a definitive diagnosis. I'm sorry, I'm not on the site now. We've got a lot of problems with truth in the media and in our medical system. And the way that I think we can combat that is, how are we taking care of ourselves? I know it's easy to live the regular American life and enjoy ourselves. Hey, heavy on the gravy, supersize me. That's the easiest way to do, is just be like everyone else. But in reality, we're in a situation where our behavior ultimately determines whether we're going to be protected or whether we're going to be infected. And which one do we want to be? As intelligent medical consumers, are we finally ready to admit that the American public is being deliciously deceived, while the slick advertising and devilishly clever food marketing convinces unsuspecting consumers to engage in a daily ritual of slow suicide as they gradually kill themselves with every meal? Do we want to be like that? That's what we have to ask ourselves. Ultimately, if you're waiting for the drug to come down the pike, if you're waiting for the vaccine, you're in trouble, because that vaccine is not going to be a regular, it's going to be a new category of vaccines, brand new, called a DNA vaccine. These DNA vaccines do not purport to increase the amount of antibodies you have against coronavirus. These DNA vaccines are designed to change your DNA so that now you're supposedly no longer susceptible. Now, if you want to be injected with something that changes your DNA, if you think human beings know enough to be able to change your DNA for the good, if you have bought the mythology of the magic of the medical system, then that's a sad situation for you to be in. Do not get that vaccine. I mean, unless you want to be part of a giant experiment.
Wow.
Daryl, I do have, again, this is only for this month, but I have to be going to another presentation.
I know. You've gone over. I was just making some notes. Well, folks, you've gotten an earful. You've gotten a mindful. Plenty of references, plenty of things to go back and do some research and over your backyard fence or down the hallway or wherever your neighbors and family and relatives and friends are and colleagues to have some discourse about this. We've been talking with Mr. Tony Grant, a broadcast research journalist specializing in medical research for half a century. And this has truly been enlightening. Mr. Grant, I know you have to scoot and skedaddle. Thank you again. You know we will be talking again offline for your next visit, and I know our listeners will be chomping at the bit to when that will be, because you're always a popular draw, and that's a good thing because people are seeking knowledge and information. And as we opened up with our bumper tune, I do believe people are ready to wake up and live. And with folks like you at the forefront, I think it's gonna go a long way towards that. Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you for the part you do, and thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. Stay safe, and peace and blessings to you and yours. All right, folks, that was Mr. Tony Grant. And you know, there were so many bonuses in there that he gave. You know, the whole Martin Luther King piece, the piece about our immune system. We talked a bit about the immune system a couple of weeks ago with one of my colleagues, Mr. Shelford Mitchell. Naturopath, nutritionist himself, holistic health practitioner. And so I would just underscore, you know, that we have already spoken of, and he is on point. With the echinacea, I am a little careful with the echinacea because our bodies, with anything, our bodies will become assumed to that. So when I'm giving protocols to my clients nationwide, you know, I'm very careful to rotate, you know, the antivirals, the immune builders, if you will. So he talked about astragalus and echinacea, and I mean, there's you know, golden seal, which you have to be very careful of too, because it's very scarce and it's not necessary to just scrounge that particular herb. Oregano oil, very, very strong. You have to be very careful with some of these things, by the way. Albeit they're natural, there's lots of natural things. Arsenic, I mean, to an extent, is natural in some form. So we have to be careful And with that, you know, I just underscore, seek a health professional. Yes, I'm promoting Daryl Clark, but I totally respect if you have a local health store, someone that you're comfortable with who is certified, who's, you know, studied this, not just as a hobby, but I certainly respect those. I've met individuals in my lifetime who are not certified, have not gone to school, who are as knowledgeable as some of my colleagues, and you know, outside of doing a practicum, you know, in their own right, are you know, somewhat a specialist in understanding natural health. So you can do a lot without getting the licensors and certifications and all of the like. One of the differences being what is their, you know, what is their experience? So you have to be very, very careful with that. I think I don't know how many thousands of cases I've worked with over the last 20 years. And those things make a difference. And then, you know, I have the network of colleagues that I always have access to. And I'm always enhancing my knowledge base. So there's some benefit to that. And anyone that's true to their field of holistic health would be of that same mindset. It never stops. Similar to the medical profession, because as I've always said, I don't poo-poo the medical profession. If I were in a dire state, or if I, you know, sliced a finger half off, which I've done, by the way, and doing some hobby woodwork 20 years ago, and you know, to have it sutured back on and have full, you know, ability, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else than in America, under the guidance of a qualified medical physician. So I respect that art and that science of medicine to a significant degree. It's just when we start to try to replace that which the body is capable of that I get very, very concerned. So all of that to say, you know, consult a professional, preferably. It's well worth it for your time and your dollars, because you're going to learn. And you can always reach me at Daryl_CLA18@msn.com or even at progressivenews@msn.com. I'll be glad to talk with you about your own situation or a loved one's situation and, you know, what we can do from a natural perspective to help. I don't diagnose and I do not prescribe. I am not a doctor and don't care to be a medical doctor. I didn't decide to go into that direction. For all the time I've put in and, well, a lot of dollars too, to be formally trained, I could have gone into probably at least nursing, you know, as a nurse practitioner, which is close to a doctor, but I chose not to. So that would be my recommendation. He said something interesting about lemon pills. Remember, many of you, one of the remedies I suggested was the pill of an orange. It's because of the bioflavonoid. I would go more with an orange pill, keeping one in the fridge. You know, if you really feel that shortness of breath or something like that, that, you know, boiling that with some onions and a little, maybe a tablespoon of salt in a pot and just kind of hanging over there and just inhaling that. Now this is not any kind of a prescription or diagnosis or anything like that. I'm not saying it's going to cure you of COVID if you have that. Certainly, I wouldn't dare go there. But I'm just saying that it has shown to be helpful, and we can talk about it in more detail if you reach out. So with that said, folks, we conclude another edition of Progressive News Weekly. If you have something pressing that you'd like to say before we close out, because we didn't have a chance to, you know, do the question and answer with Mr. Grant or Dr. Mendoza, and so, you know, that opportunity we'll have to pick up the next time. But if you have questions for either of them, you can reach out to me, and I'd be more than happy to do that questioning for you. And again, don't forget, we have the meditation nightly beginning at 9 o'clock. Actually, they start at 8:30. So if you'd like, send me an email. Send me one tonight. I'll be online Darryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L underscore C-L-A 18 at msn.com. And for those of you who have my reach information, drop me a line. I'll be glad to text you that website so that you can participate in that Zoom meditation that's taking place tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday, Sunday, and all next week up until that meditation at 6:45 on next Thursday morning, in which case you can participate with some 30,000. I've done it in the past. I did it back in April with the first of the three powerful full moons earlier this month, and it really is something to experience and to prepare you for it. It is a good idea to have some kind of experience if you're not experienced with meditation, because then you'll truly benefit more readily from that. So with that said, I wish all of you wellness, peace, happiness. We just, as I said, we need to be aware. The theme, as I said at the top of the program, be aware. We are in the archives, folks. The archives, right after this program's over, is available. Share this with a loved one. If you listen to this program and this didn't stimulate some curiosity, I think, you know, you need to pinch yourself. Follow up on some of the things that Mr. Tony Grant said. Listen to the archives and catch some of it. If you have a question, you want to drop me a mail message, you can do that. But certainly encourage someone to go to the archives. There's strength in numbers, folks. We can make a difference. We can get back to some extent real news. We can at least begin to move in that direction. So let's do that. Let's start a movement. You, I, us, together. We have someone pressing that wants to comment before we close out. You're on the air. Hello?
Hi,
yes?
Brother.
Hi, how you doing, sis? How are you? What's your thought?
Great. How you doing? I just wanted to revisit Dr. Mendoza's. Did he comment about having information about being able to contribute to certain charities?
Yeah, what he was saying is, and you know, we didn't have the time, and I'm thinking maybe we'll have him back next week to explain some of that, what he was talking about, inhaling and exhaling. And as you remember, at the beginning of the year, he always does a beginning of year meditation and discourse workshop. And many of you asked me for the worksheets for the year. He has worksheets that he's given, and you can, you know, use them every year to kind of reflect on how things are going, what you can do to enhance your goals and the potential for reaching them. And so when he talks about exhaling, he's saying, it reminded me of the movie, remember Waiting to Exhale, with the late, great Whitney Houston. And he said, well, one of the things we need to do, because we're holding on, that's what when he says, you know, exhale, he's saying, let go. We have a term, let go and let God. I mean, let go. We've heard the term so many ways, so many times, let go. You've probably told it, you know, to the children, you know, sometimes you got to let go. You know, we use those two words so often, and really maybe we don't step back. But they're powerful. And what he's saying, and he's put that in one word, exhale. And so he says, with that, we got to let go of, and if you get into the whole discourse about it, which I've participated in with Master Glenn, there's a whole segment on just exhaling. And he talks about clearing out. He talks about clearing out your closet. He said the average person uses about 10 to 20% of what's in their closet. Some people maybe 30%, but you're not getting 40%. He says unless you have a very scarce closet. I mean, that's just one segment of his workshop. So he says we need to exhale on the closet. He says, who got a junk drawer? Exhale on the junk drawer. He said, who got some extra money that really could help someone else? And that's what he was referring to with the charity. He says, exhale. Because when you clean your closet, that energy, you're freeing up energy, is going to come back to you. When you give something, when you give some dollars, you may not realize it. It may come to you faster than you can imagine. It's going to come back. We all have little needs or big needs financially. So he says one of the things we need to do is give some money away. He ain't saying $50 or $20 or $10 or $100. It could be a dime. He's saying, but give something with the heart, the good intention that you're helping. So a dime could be go a long way to a little girl or a little boy in the supermarket, you know, who just the fact of receiving money. So when I say a dime, I meant literally. But it could be $100. It depends on where we are, you know, physically and spiritually and mentally and emotionally. And that's what he meant by giving. Your favorite charity. Your favorite charity could be, you know, the homeless person you see around town every now and then. You know, that could become your favorite charity. So that's what he was referring to. I don't know if I'm answering your question or not. But
well, yeah,
God,
you did.
Rephrase it.
You did.
Oh, okay.
I thought that
yeah.
he had a list of charities that we could contribute to that he was suggesting.
No, he was not. He was not. But he at the PranicHealingUSA.com website, they have a donation button there because they're always doing benevolent things there. So if you wanted to give something to the Pranic Healing organization,
right.
you can do that at the website. The website is PranicHealingUSA.com, and there is a donation button there if you wanted to give something through that particular entity. You can do that. But other than that, it's your favorite, or you can create a favorite if you step back and just think about it. Write down, you know, give me the insight for how I should give. And if you write that on a piece of paper and just kind of go to sleep on it, I'm working on sort of a best practice in that area. And you and folks, listeners who are still there, you can try that with me and see what happens in the morning. You might be surprised. It's sort of a subliminal case study I'm doing of myself, a little Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde here. But it's worked in the past. It really has worked. You'd be surprised.
That's
worked. You know, there's a saying, don't seek wisdom because wisdom is waiting for you. You know, if you've lived long enough, or regardless of how long you've lived, because wisdom is just experience. And I've learned and understood from many sages and masters that I've been blessed to train up under that what we need is around us and within us. And the combination of the two, the synergy of the two, is what draws the answer. But we don't use it enough. And you know, I myself, as I'm telling you about this, I'm looking right at my finger pointing to me, and that's, you know, that self-study that I'm doing right now. So, yeah, I would encourage you to try that. You know, just write. You have something that's perplexing you. Write it. Put it on a piece of paper and write a question to yourself. Don't answer it. Go to sleep. May not be there in the next morning, but I do believe the answer will come to you because it's there. And it's going to come in the middle of the afternoon, or it may wake you up.
Well, when you lose, think about it, when you're not really focusing on it, it's about that, and to take you back to what you just said, letting go.
Yeah. Yeah, we have so many inhibitions, so many blockages inside of us,
yeah.
and then where meditation helps. So when you release those blockages, it really frees you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very, it makes sense to me. Always
yeah.
has. You have to, you know, I tell myself the same thing over and over again, and it just always proves to be true when you let
and
go.
I know, you think of anyone over 25 years old has known at some point you needed to let go that you didn't. If it's just a relationship or and I'm not saying a sexual relationship or intimate relationship. It could be a business relationship or, you know, something, educational relationship, just something that, you know, you held on. And so that's one of the toughest things that we have. And as I said, that's a project that I'm working on right now, and it's work. It's really something. I'm enjoying it, but it's something, and I'm seeing the fruits of it. That's the interesting part for everyone else that hung on till the end. Little bonus, thanks to our friend in Ohio here, Sis.
Right.
Great question. Great question. Beautiful. Thank you for your heart.
Very good. Oh, you're
thank you for your good. Heart.
Yeah, love you.
Love you, too. Thank you for calling in. And so, folks, everybody, stay safe. Stay loving. Use this time. This is an auspicious time. I mean, yeah, it's a tenuous time. We know that. It's a challenging time, but it's an auspicious time. It's a time of opportunity right now. And it's by no coincidence. It's the energies of the planet that drew this. You see, the things that I was going through and that you were going through, not just you, Iris, but all the other people on the line, all of those things combined, they fall under the common thread. And the universe can only take so much before it's going to present itself, its own solution. When you have a fever, when you have the flu, you're going to get a fever. You have something in your chest, you're going to cough. I mean, that's human nature. In the fall, we have the wind that blows the leaves off the trees. It's just nature that this had to happen. And it's an opportunity for us to understand that everything is working in divine order. And as Dr. Mendoza said, tonight he's going to ask, what good thing has happened? He's going to ask folks to ask themselves. So I will share that with the listeners. Ask yourself, what good thing has happened? I mean, there may have been a lot of bad things. I'm just saying, what good thing? If it was 80 bad things and 5 good things, I'm just asking, what was the one good thing? If there was one. I mean, you may have had things and just a few bad things. It may have been like, wow, this was an enlightening experience. But I'm saying, think about one or two of the good things. And I believe within that good thing, whether it was a fewer good things than bad things or not, is a blossoming potential of goodness that will carry you beyond all of the challenges that this pandemic has brought. Because if you're around to even talk about this, there's a reason for it. So many have transpired, you know, during this. If we are going to be here to make it through this, it's for a reason. And that's what we need to think about. That's the key to make the difference as we come out of this. What is it that I learned about me? And if we all take that attitude and seriously get still and let go of the drama and the trauma that's going on around, and focus on that, then we'll make the difference that's necessary to help bring our scenario as a planet in balance, to help. We may not, and probably are not the one to bring the whole thing, but collectively, I believe it will make a shift. And we've been talking about this critical mass for years and years and years. You know that from Robert Redford's book, Celestial Prophecy. So I think we are in that time frame. And it's interesting, even earlier this year. I mean, not Robert Redford. I meant James Redford. Robert Redford, is he an actor or something? But James Redfield, the Celestine Prophecy, talks about critical mass. And then eventually we're going to approach that. I've been talking about that for about 7 years. And it will be a shift. This is a shift that no one can deny. So let's embrace and not be afraid. Fear is the enemy. Caution is good, but fear is dangerous, and it is the enemy. So, with that said, as I said, our theme to be aware, and I'd just like to close on one of my favorite groups. It's nice. I think about Arsenio Hall. He always used to say, I just love this. This is a joy. I get to invite all my favorite groups, the Delphonics and the OJs, and he says, my God, I mean, this is just a joy. So I get to play my opening bumper tune like I did with Bob Marley, Wake Up and Live. You have to Google those lyrics. I mean, the lyrics are just, just remarkable. I mean, like him.
Yeah,
he's
ahead of his time.
Yeah, I mean, him and Michael. I mean, these guys are just so ahead of their time. You know, he says, wake up and live now. Wake up and live. You know, he talks about, you see one coca full of basket. You know, talking about, you know, you get caught up in stuff. He says, now, you live big today, but tomorrow you're buried in a casket. So, you know, it's just speaking to how we get distracted with those things that look good and feel good. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, is about simplifying. In fact, he starts the song with, you know, life is one big road with lots of signs. So when you're riding through the ruts, don't complicate your mind. You know, he's saying simplify. Free from hate, mischief, and jealousy. Bury your thoughts. Put your vision into reality. Man, come on. Put your vision into reality. So, yeah, let's wake up and live. And now we're going to close out with Open Our Eyes, one of my favorites by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Peace and blessings to you and yours. Love you, sis. Tell family I said hi.
Love you.
And love them. And to all my listeners, love you too. Tell your family and loved ones. Reach out and reach out to somebody you haven't talked to in the family for a bit and let them know you're thinking about them, or a loved one or a friend. You know, just let them know. It's more than likely just what they need to hear. All right? Let's open our eyes and get with this. See you next week. Happy May Day tomorrow. Can you believe it? We're in May. All you Tauruses out there, you know what Master Glenn said? We can all utilize those energies of Taurus. The energies of Taurus are upon us. Yeah, that's right. So what are they? He said stability. So let's work it, folks. We can utilize that stability, right? That's that Taurus energy, practicality, very practical. And they don't shy from hard work, very ambitious. God bless.
open eyes, yeah, open eyes. Children.